You are listening to The Food Fix, a podcast where we talk with innovators and policymakers on how to better feed the world. I'm your host, Max Johnston. Contributor Evan Kutz spoke with Shane Bernardo, a community organizer working in Detroit's grassroots food movement to bring culturally relevant foods to minority communities. Shane grew up working in his family's small ethnic grocery store in Westside Detroit, where they worked with the Asian, African, and Caribbean community to purchase culturally relevant foods and share recipes, traditions, and rituals linked to those foods.
When I was growing up, our family kept a garden in the backyard ever since I was a kid. There wasn't really a time where my family didn't have a close relationship with earth and grew our own food.
Now, Shane works for a number of grassroots organizations, such as Detroit Food Justice Task Force, Uprooting Racism, Planting Justice, the People's Platform Detroit, and the Equitable Detroit Coalition. Take a listen.
I actually come from a long line of subsistence farmers, craftspeople, fisher folk, people that hunt and forage for the food. My people, my family, my ancestors have led a fairly subsistent lifestyle for generations, multiple generations.
And I'm guessing that things changed once they arrived here in the U.S.?
Well, in particular, how that's changed is when my parents went abroad to make a living, which they were encouraged to do, I would say forced even, because jobs were not that plentiful back home, to go abroad and earn a living. What happened in that process is that it dramatically changed their relationship with their food, because they went from living in the villages where they led more subsistent lifestyles, living with the land, and going into cities and going abroad where they didn't have the same kind of relationship with the environment and the land and the earth and the food that it provides, and went from being growers and producers to being consumers and wage earners and laborers. So it dramatically changed their relationship to the food that they're eating. Even before they came to the U.S., there was a big effort, in particular after World War II, that made my people and my family and my parents more dependent on processed food. And so even before my family came here to the U.S., we were already starting to subside on a more Western diet that was popularized by the influence of the U.S., and in particular the U.S. military in the Philippines, which had quite a few naval bases there because of World War II, but also because the Philippines is the first U.S. colonial possession that was taken over after the Spanish-American War and the Filipino-American War. So because of that influence, a lot of people within the Philippine diaspora not only became dependent on a more Western diet because we were displaced from our subsistent lifestyles and our relationship to the earth, but we also started to take on a lot of the chronic health disease that is associated with the Western diet and these highly processed foods that have a lot of salt, unhealthy fat, loaded with sugar and preservatives, and a lot of other things that aren't really good for you. So when you change your relationship with your food, but also namely the earth that the food provides, it has a dramatic and disparate effect also on your health.
The organizations that you work with rely primarily on grant funding. Does that make it difficult to continue working in your community?
That's a huge structural issue that keeps people that are vulnerable, namely me and my family and other people of color, and also indigenous folks, too, that were displaced by settler colonialism and Western imperialism. And so what's happening now is the federal subsidies that are providing funding for the growing industrial farming around growing commodity foods like wheat, soy, corn, those are your three top ones. Those are being turned into food products. And the multinational corporations that are growing these foods, but also processing them into food product, are benefiting from this ordeal. And so there's a lot of subsidies for commodity foods, and there's a lot of subsidies for what is called specialty foods. And specialty foods are your fruits and vegetables. And so we have this very, very hurtful cycle that is propped up by federal subsidies through the Farm Bill that is producing a lot of unhealthy food that is prevalent in low-income neighborhoods, communities of color, immigrant communities, and so on. And so then you're starting to see a disparity between more affluent communities, white communities, versus their non-white counterparts and less affluent counterparts in cities like Detroit. And so because of the prevalence of this food and because of how it's subsidized by the federal government to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, it's everywhere, it's accessible, and it's very affordable. So these multinational corporations are also benefiting from the consumer side as well, because low-income people that qualify for food assistance are spending the money on not just food anymore, but this food product. So these multinational corporations like Walmart and others are benefiting from this arrangement through the federal government that's subsidizing these commodity crops and the creation of these food products, which are having a very adverse and disparate effect on low-income communities, indigenous communities, immigrant communities, and communities of color that are developing these chronic health diseases. My own father passed away from complications due to heart disease, obesity, and diabetes. And so over the course of one lifetime, I saw how my father developed these chronic health diseases because we were more subsistent on the Western diet, which is very prevalent and pervasive with these kinds of food products.
So what is being done to address these health disparity issues? Has any progress been made?
Well, up until last summer, I was working for a social service organization in Detroit that provided emergency food assistance. And while that was important work, we noticed that there were multiple generations of the same family that were coming to our organization to receive emergency food assistance. And we looked at that and we said, hey, this is a really big problem. We're starting to see multiple members of the family, multiple generations of the same family come to us seeking the same type of aid. And so we weren't necessarily having a really big impact on changing the status quo. And to a great effect, we were normalizing the status quo. We weren't making any structural changes. But I would say that there is a value to organizations that are providing a direct service like emergency food assistance. They are, at the very least, keeping people from falling through the cracks.
I see. So what exactly should people be doing about it?
We need to do the hard work of keeping people from falling through the cracks. We also need to do the really as equally hard, if not harder, doing the work around structural change. We have to realize, one, that it's there. We have to, two, we have to have very tough conversations about structural change. And three, for those of us that may benefit from the status quo, we may have to do some very hard looking within ourselves and asking ourselves, well, why are we in a position to address structural change or make reforms to this very oppressive system, and start to look at our own privileges and how we prop up these disparities of power that are very prevalent in the food system.
Well, Shane, before I let you go, I want to thank you for your time talking to the Food Fix and sharing on some of these important issues facing Michigan communities.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.
What do you think of Bernardo's research? Do businesses have a responsibility to be culturally sensitive in their practices? Email us with any questions or comments at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com or leave them in the comments below this post. The Food Fix is a project of the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation and the Knight Center for Environmental Journalism at Michigan State University. My name is Max Johnston. Thanks for listening.